From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. Welcome, listeners, to a very special episode of the UCB Digital Podcast. We're all about trying new things on this show, trying different ways to benefit your work as makers out there. And so today, we start something new. Today, we've made a little compilation of some of the best advice from previous guests on this show, all centered around making a web series, to hopefully shine a little bit more light on the process that goes into that specific medium. It's not an uncommon thing for a filmmaker just starting out, or even folks who are trying to get noticed, to make a web series. It's a great way to show your comedic voice, your artistic voice, your filmmaking skills in a way that serializes a story and that also sets up what could be a longer form version of your show. But if you want high production value, something you can be proud of, a web series can't feel small. It has to feel ambitious. And that means working with people. Filmmaking, not a medium you can do by yourself. You need other people around you in other roles to help you get the project done, even something that is DIY. That means booking a crew, working with awesome actors, maybe a writer, maybe a director, maybe a producer, having some passion, some hustle, and some smart distribution. Because, hell, there's so much stuff on the internet. How are you going to get noticed? So that's going to take teamwork. And here at UCB Digital Podcast, we've had a bevy of brilliant guests who have made successful web series or content, and they've done it in teams and working in teams in different ways. Definitely brings to mind James III, John Braylock, and Jerome Milligan of the Seriously.tv series Projecting and the hosts of the Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood podcast. They came on the show to talk about how Projecting came to life and how it was an extension of their working relationship that they've built from their podcast into the digital medium and hopefully launching into television. Here's John, James, and Jerome.
I think it started out first with just us coming up with ideas of what we wanted to do for a series, both digital, but with always the mindset of wanting to do a television show.
Sure.
You know?
Runway.
Yeah.
Gotta know.
Got it.
You gotta know.
And I think we all always realize that, you know, Comedy Central has this digital wing. IFC has a digital wing. You have Seriously. You have Mashable. You got BuzzFeed. You have like all of these platforms.
Daily, above average.
You know, exactly. Like there are all these platforms that are doing digital content, and it's much easier for networks to look at things that kind of already have video content behind it for them to greenlight stuff, especially for people they don't really know. So we were like, okay, let's think of series that we could do. What do we like? What are we passionate about? And we sat down and like came up with a bunch of different ideas, and Projecting was one of them.
Yeah, and we went to, like, we were lucky enough that, like, through the three of us or four of us, because this meeting seriously came through James Carr. We had meetings at different places, so we kind of got the feel of, like, what people were going to offer, what people latched on to. But seriously, like, it was quick. It was like a quick thing of, like, oh, we like this. We'll support this, you know, very quickly. It was no, like, do work for free, which is not to diss people, because people do need proof of stuff. But it was just, like, trust that no one else gave immediately, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess to I'm sure there are people who listen who want to know, so did they call you? Or assuming, like, something happens and you're, like, kind of successful, like, and people must reach out. That's not exactly what happened. I would say we use the momentum that the three of us had individually, and James Carr, so the four of us had individually, and kind of, like, put that together and, like, form this whole thing, you know. So I know I was doing, like, character showcases, and so was James.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jarrah has, like, been working at MTV and, has, like, producer connections and people that he knows that are, you know, bringing people into pitch. And then James Carr is a writer. He had just done some written sketches for Trip Tank, that Comedy Central, like, animated show. Okay. And so he was getting some meetings through his agent. And we kind of just used all of our individual meetings. And then sometimes we, like, just met people and we were like, yeah, we're doing all of this, like, this Black Men podcast thing. And people were like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, bring them in too, you know? Yeah, and then we, and like, and then, like, once you have a couple meetings in the books, it's much easier to go to other places and be like, we're already meeting with these people if you want to meet with us. And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so fascinating, too, because the world and the media is so small that, like, once you have one of those meetings, everyone else already knows about it.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, did they like that, too? Oh, yeah, I think we're good. I remember the day that we decided to do the show with Seriously. I remember talking to people at different places, and they'd be like, oh, wait.
We liked that.
Yeah, I remember immediately, like, wait, are you guys, oh, I thought you were going to just come back with us. Like, no, there's options. Like, people think that, like, you're, like, they are, because, you know, we're all still on the come up, so it's like, there's a desperation I feel like people think you have as an aspiring artist, which we do have, but people sometimes take advantage of that. And but being a producer, I've been in rooms where I've seen it done to other people, where it's like, people should say no, but they don't. And they should. And the thing is, if they say no, they can come back and get more leverage if they just say, nah, this doesn't seem right. Yeah. And just believe in yourself. But you're so...
It's hard to have that
confidence. It's so hard because you're so excited to get in this room.
And you've been rejected a bunch of other times before.
So many times. Yeah.
Like, it's hard to know when you have something that's worth saying no to certain people.
Yeah, no is a scary word.
Yeah,
it is.
It's really scary.
And I think it's scary on both sides. It's like even conversations that wind up as a no... Like from a pitch side, it's usually more of a ghost than no.
Yep.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. It is.
Or it's like, if anything, you know, the hardest language they'll use is, we're not sure it's right for us at this time.
Right.
You know, it's always like, you know, not that it's not good, not that we don't like it. It's always like a very soft, we're going to just see what other opportunities are there.
Sure,
maybe you guys have some other things that might work better with our network or, you know.
But then you always hear those stories about... One of my favorite stories is about Breaking Bad, because I love that show, and about how many places that show was pitched.
Yeah.
And people just kept saying, I don't get it. Like, I remember, like, reading the interviews, like, oh, people said they didn't get it. And all it took was one person. That's all it ever is. It's just one person saying, you know what? We'll stand behind this real quick.
Yeah.
And now everyone's like, why didn't we see it? Why didn't we see it?
Yeah.
So we should have saw this thing. We should have known this thing would have been
that
so
became
great.
A phenomenon.
Like, like, even when you think about Broad City, how many places they went, and it's like, no one's like...
Stranger Things, similarly.
It's
like
fascinating.
15, something like that.
Oh, wow. But hindsight is 2020.
Right.
It is.
No, and also, sometimes those networks are kind of right. Sometimes... A show wouldn't have worked on there now.
Oh, yeah.
Nope.
You know what I mean? Stranger Things works because you could watch the full 8 hours on immediately. Netflix.
I don't think if Stranger Things was on NBC, like,
no way.
No.
I don't think it would have been a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, no.
It sounds like when we first started, there was a little difficulty in answering the question, but it almost sounds like you guys are thinking about what is best for this, you know, iteration.
Yeah.
As much as for self in terms of, like, that. It's interesting because, again, it feels like it's like there's a lot of things happening, but that also means there's lots of opportunities for it to fall apart, too.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
It is.
Right.
But the thing is, like, it's interesting because, again, I feel like the power's in the group. And the thing is, too, think about how fun that is if you make it with the people that you started out with. And then, listen, once you make it, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can go get, like, I can go crazy.
All bets are off.
Like, once you make it, like, you can worry about all that other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel that, though, 100%. Like, especially the, like, making it with the people that you started with. Like, this is not the exact same thing, but I keep recalling hearing Steve Carell talk about the 40-year-old virgin and then talking about saying something like, you know, it was just like this idea that we came up with at Second City. And then, like, just hearing that and then, like, knowing that at the time that he's talking about it, that idea is far away from the time when he was at Second City.
Yeah.
Like, that is enticing to me. Like, that idea of, like, this thing that I was doing when I was in the trenches is now this thing that, like, is what I'm making my most money out of, and I'm doing it with or talking about it with people that I worked with.
Yeah. I also see it, like, I think the ideal version of how this plays out is, like, a Key and Peele or a Broad City.
Yeah.
Where you have a show that the group does together that it becomes popular and successful, and then that allows the individual members to also go ahead and do the things that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of team is always going to be there and, like, can always come back and do something. You know, I kind of hope and imagine that our podcast will last throughout whatever iteration of thing we become or our individual careers become. But in terms of, like, individual projects, like, you know, it's probably at this point more beneficial for us to stay together and try to get break in through the power of the three of us and then do the individual thing than like us try to pursue our individual things separately, like putting prioritizing that over us as a group, and then like maybe all three of those fail.
And it's so hard too. Yeah. It's so hard too because like I go into every audition like I hope I book this.
Oh yeah, know? Totally.
Like, every time you want to book
it. Oh yeah.
I hope I'm about to book this right now. You know.
But I know I've said to you guys, well, my rule is if one of y'all book a show in L.A., I'm easily coming. Like the thing is like because to me it's
well,
like
we know
oh,
you're
y'all
easily
it.
Coming. You have that. No. We already know about your egg. Your
no, listen,
egg.
Man. Listen, man. I'm saying I'm not even going to use that because I'm living where y'all live at. Paying no rent.
When I listen to those guys talk, there's so much love in their relationship. And there's also a lot of love in our next guests, Soren and Jalas. These are two hardworking filmmakers, writers, creators, actors, and best friends who are also a comedy duo. Their first series, Dibs, they made, I think, 3 seasons of, all on their own, launched that into writing and producing branded content and original series for companies like Thinks, The New Yorker, The Flama, and more. And when we talked to them, we got into all that nitty-gritty stuff about keeping good communication with your team, or in this case, your creative partner.
I think one of my favorite things about working with Tracy is we call each other like yin yang. Like we're so different in the best way. Mm-hmm. So I'm always like, what's next? Like, what's the next project? I want to shoot like more and more
down
the
road.
And Tracy's great about like wrapping things up and like,
I'm like, no, we still have to do this. Yeah. Like we have this thing that's
yeah, very like organized and is making sure we're finishing projects and like. So I think it's so great to have a partner because, first of all, you know, we give each other homework and we know what, you know, your strengths are and my strengths so that.
But we're going to go on like this is 2012 we met. So we're going to go on like 5 years of working together almost. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So we've had to figure this out. I mean, when we started working together, we were both working full time jobs.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We pushed ourselves to an edge to a point where we like were ripping our hair out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to look at each other and go, this, we have to now reassess. We've had to really figure out like what's our strengths. We've had to have ways to communicate with each other. Like how.
I would say we talk constantly, especially if we're in production, writing.
Yeah.
Any type of mode like that, you know.
We also fill out the roles a little bit more. So like I take on more of the producer side.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But she does produce, but it's just like lead producer, junior producer, and then she is the lead editor, and I'm like a junior producer. I edit, but it'll
be great. I mean, one of my favorite times are like when we're, I always call it like writing and post-production, which I think we do. Like when we shoot like an interview, like our Bubby series, it was like we have to write all these jokes and figure out this video and post. So we'll both be on different computers, like in the same room, just like working on
making
cuts.
Different jokes.
Yeah,
and then showing each other and being like, I like that. Oh, that works. Like, this one is better, whatever, for this joke. And that's so great.
So how do you keep it fresh going forward? What's 2017 look like for you guys to sort of, like, keep each other engaged and creatively motivated?
I actually think I feel very excited. I think we had I would call it a little bit of a breaking point.
Yeah.
And really focused on how to be better and what we needed ourselves
for each. I mean, obviously in this
individual
marriage too, it's like you can't put in to the relationship what you want if your body is like if you're having trouble on your own. And I think honestly we had a very frank conversation, which we're probably gonna have to do every year, every month, but it's very much honesty I think is what keeps the creative, like, in the sense of we both have to look at each other and say, do we want to be doing now these viral things or this for money? Or do we want to, like, what do you want to do? What do I want to do? And sometimes it is, I'll come to her and say, I really want to do this. And she'll go, I don't think I want to do that. And I'll go, okay, I might do it on my own then. And she'll go, and I can't wait to see it.
But we used to be like that. I'm not going to lie. We used to, used to be a struggle.
Yeah.
We used to be like, oh my God.
We have to agree on everything all the time.
And because like, again, like I said, we are different. Mm-hmm. She is very like, keep going. She's an energizer bunny. And I'm like, need to recharge in my home. Like, don't talk to me. So it's like, she'll come to me and be like, do you want to do this? And I will say like, I don't, that's what I'm saying. Everything is case by case.
Yeah.
that's how we've sort of done a lot of our projects. Like, yeah, we might go, okay, we want 15 videos.
Yeah.
But that's just a choice of 15 videos by March. It's right. not 15 videos. Like, we don't have to worry about next year.
Right.
I think it is honesty. Like, one of us might get cast and have to go to LA. Yes. Or have to, like, we know that. We have different lives. We, you know, my family is from here. Mm-hmm. I have to see them rather mm-hmm. often. Mm-hmm. Like, we have different things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just stopped wanting to be like hindrances for each other. It was too stressful.
Yeah.
So now we're just completely supportive.
Right. And
we were completely supportive. We thought we were being completely supportive. Yeah. We didn't know.
Yeah, I think we were, but to the point that was detrimental because yes. we thought we had to agree on everything and sure. be making similar pledges on everything.
Yes.
Or I'm sure there was guilt, you know,
both ways. We push each other. I'm a hard worker yes. and so is she, but yes. like, it has to be manageable.
Sure.
Right.
Or I will lose my mind. Yeah. So I don't really know. I guess we like went sort of roundabout, but like I don't really know. I do think it's communication at every yeah. point. We tell each other, I know our voice now. So if mm-hmm. I have a pitch that I think is great for the both mm-hmm. of us, I'll bring it. But if there's something I want to do myself that I think would just be good for me, I'm going right. to figure out how to do that.
Sure. Right.
So I don't really know. I think it is just completely always open. We are best friends.
Right. That's also a great bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And we know each other very well.
Working with a team that you pick is great. But sometimes you don't get to pick your team. Sometimes somebody else picks your team for you. Like, say, when you're on a UCB digital team. These are teams of makers that we used to put together here at UCB that we felt like had a common aesthetic, but then we sort of asked them to go in a room and say, put your minds together and make something better than what you could do on your own. Some groups thrived in that environment. Some groups really didn't like it. But Zach Broussard was part of a team that thrived. His team, The Buzzards, is an LA-based UCB digital team that made an unscripted series called Shooting Strangers. The concept is pretty cool. They went out into the streets of Los Angeles to shoot an action movie, a short action movie, only they didn't have any actors. They had their full crew, they had their main actors, but all of the other roles they cast by basically going up to people on the streets of LA and saying, hey, want to be in a movie? Which I guess is everybody in LA's dream. So it wasn't very hard to cast, but they got great reactions and great experiences by really treating somebody like the star of a movie, and the end product winds up being pretty funny as well. We talked to Zach about working with strangers, both on your team and out in the world.
And our whole mission when our team was set up was that to do something edgy and absurd and unscripted.
Yeah.
And that was sort of like the realm that we were kind of tasked to live in. I think this came from a nugget of a smaller pitch, and then organically we kind of all came up with this thing together, which is like writing this action movie, which sort of lets everybody do their thing yeah. to like the nth degree. We let the editors kind of really flex their muscles, let the directors like have a little fun.
Yeah.
So often it's just like the sketch actors or whatever kind of who get to goof around the most.
Sure.
And so this sort of let everybody just kind of really wing it and kind of have a little, really kind of strut their stuff a little bit.
And you guys are the stars of the show too. Not just the actors in the movie, but the sort of, the production crew are the stars of the actual Shooting Strangers,
which I really liked about the series too. This is my second digital team, and yeah. the last one was I just made a web series, which was yeah. great. I had a great time, but there's so much work that goes into creating these series.
Yeah,
and it always feels like just the people in front of the camera get the most out of it a little bit.
Sure,
they get to show it off a little more directly. And so this sort of was a nice way to kind of turn the camera around and show really the process. I mean, how many hands are involved? I mean,
yeah.
a lot of this stuff couldn't have been done without like our two producers, Brett Kushner and Jackie, are just so yeah. good at what they do because they're like actually professional producers. A good idea is really limited by producers. And so it's really cool to have like two guys who know what they're doing. And it was pretty rad. And that's what's been really cool about being on a team out here in LA is like how many guys are pretty much all of these people for the most part have their foot in like the industry where they're actually working, they're hustling. So you have this like skill set across the board that I think really, really started to shine.
Shooting Strangers, of course, available 24 hours a day at youtube.com/UCB Comedy. Okay, last plug I'll do in this show, I promise. So you make the thing, but getting it out there is sometimes just as tricky. So we went deep into our archives to a conversation with the comedy duo Coker and Stratton about their digital series, The Other Kennedys. This is a short series that they shot. They actually traveled to Maine to shoot it. They premiered at the New York Television Festival and won. They had a distribution strategy that included promo videos, newsletters, festival submissions, and they also hired a director and a collaborator who was also incredibly passionate about the project and submitted it everywhere that he could to also advance his career. So they've got some insights into how to launch a web series successfully.
We've made a point to try to get as much mileage out of the 11 minutes of footage that are online right now. We made 8 promos that were all like 15 seconds apiece, and then we made 10 episodes, all which are around a minute long. And once we put it out there, we, first of all, it was like, it was the promos. We were just trying to get our friends excited about it before we ever released it. Like, we took our time editing. We made 8 promos and like sort of slowly released them like as the weeks progressed.
And it, it almost was its own web series itself, the promos, because they were just, there were so many of them.
How much lead time did you give that?
I think we started probably a month or so.
A month and a half.
Like we released them in March, but I think we started like beginning of February releasing promos. And by the end of February, people thought it was like, this was a bit. People thought it wasn't a real web series. So they were like super surprised when, when it came out. You know, once we actually released it, some people release everything at once. We spaced it out. We released initially 2 episodes. And then decided for the next 4 weeks, we were going to release one on Tuesday and Thursday.
So twice a week for like basically over a month. The whole thing.
And I'm not sure if that necessarily was the best strategy, because I know a lot of people will, you know, go to the site once and they'll watch whatever's there. They're not going to make a point to go out and revisit it. But Marshall and I really probably used every promotional tool possible to try to get people to watch it. We both like sent out MailChimp emails.
And big shout out, big shout out to MailChimp.
MailChimp. You know, a lot of people like, in a lot of people unsubscribed immediately.
A lot of ex-girlfriends be like, hey, take me off your list. I don't care about your web series.
Were you guys MailChimp guys before? You signed up for MailChimp just to blast out about it.
Exactly.
Just to blast,
Sure. We all got to join MailChimp sometime.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the brand, you know?
And then we just emailed to a lot of people we knew that were, you know, doing write-ups on web series. And that started giving us, like, a lot of traction. And so I think that's what's really nice about being in this comedy community. Like, we have a lot of people that are making their own content, but we have a lot of people now that are, for lack of a better term, they're tastemakers. Sure. They're the ones that are, like, writing these articles and telling what the rest of the country, like, what they should be watching and what they should be reading.
So when you guys, you guys were putting this stuff out, you guys have a YouTube channel.
We have a YouTube channel.
And that's where you pushed it.
So we, you know, we, before that, there was just, you know, various sketches on the YouTube channel, but we built out a website. So we were trying to drive most of the traffic to the website, theotherkennedys.com. Check it out.
Check it out. Still relevant.
So it was mainly the website. You know, we just got a Squarespace account and built it ourselves, and it was pretty easy. And then posted the YouTube, embedded the YouTube videos on the website.
And do you have the sort of, like, I guess, like, so at this point, how did, because also some of this festival success and sort of what it does for your career doesn't necessarily translate into YouTube views. How have the videos done on YouTube specifically?
They've done pretty well. I think the most successful video has like around 10,000 views, which I know, like,
which in YouTube terms isn't great.
It's a drop in the bucket. It's like really nothing.
I mean, it's no like tutorial numbers, but I think it's pretty good numbers for a web series.
No makeup tutorial numbers.
Or bow tie tutorials. Those guys are killing it.
Those guys are crushing it. So yeah, I mean, I think for us, like, it wasn't, you know, getting views on YouTube is huge, and like it'd be great, but I think we were more interested in getting the right people to see it and, you know, making something good.
Yeah. I mean,
not necessarily something that was going to like go viral.
Sure. That makes sense. As far as like that strategy you were talking about, you said, well, maybe that wasn't the best strategy. Why did you guys decide on that release strategy?
I think because we have friends that have yeah. released web series and people have tried both yep. different strategies.
Yeah. And we kind of, since we were kind of like releasing the promos a little bit at a time, yeah. I think we also should like follow up doing the whole series a little bit at a time, just so it's not like we drop it all at once and then the views are kind of scattered for yeah. each one. It's like something to look forward to. I think there's still a market for that in the web of like something to look forward to, not just like everything is binge worthy.
Yeah. Seems pretty measured, right? Because it's yeah. like if you're saying that you did 8 promos in a month leading up and then essentially 10 episodes in a month afterwards, that feels like, so you're really releasing over 20 days almost of 60.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, and then when you factor in weekends, that's a pretty consistent sort of like output.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sort of like holding some regular, also for you guys, it's probably like a Facebook post every couple of days or something.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And I think for us, we wanted to, you know, keep it active as mm-hmm. long as we could, as opposed to just like sending out an email blast, posting something on Facebook, and then leaving it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just sort of leaving it out in the wild to fend for itself.
Yeah. Cause it was kind of the first project we had done that like featured us and not like goofy outfits yeah. and wigs and like big sunglasses, you know? Like yeah. it was something that like was us, you know, extreme versions of ourselves.
Sure.
Us on camera, like being, you know, like characters we like to play.
Yeah.
And it's something we wanted to get the most mileage out of just because it's just showing the world like this is what we can offer.
So you push it out on YouTube. It's not necessarily in terms of YouTube like a viral
no.
hit, but that's mm-hmm. not necessarily its intention. You're pushing towards taste. You're pushing towards tastemakers and trying to get some articles written. Where did the decision to sort of go out to festivals factor in for you guys as well?
I think when we shot it, we already knew we wanted to submit it to the New York Television Festival.
Yeah.
And so that was like the big festival that we wanted to get into. And then, you know, we submitted to Northside. We submitted to Dublin Webfest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our director was submitting all this stuff.
Yeah.
Shane Tilston. He was just like, kind of like, we'd get emails every once in a while, like, hey, submit it for the Dublin Web Fest. Keep your fingers crossed. Like, all right, cool. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Shane wore so many hats in this,
yeah.
In this series. Like, not only did he direct it, he edited it all himself. Yeah. He produced it.
Yeah.
And like, after, you know, we had it out there, he was still pushing it, sending it to everybody he knows. Cause he yeah. works in the industry. He's a line producer of VH1.
Cool.
And so he really just sent it out to anybody he could think of.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been, you know, our biggest advocate.
Yeah.
So the main takeaway here, you can't make anything in a vacuum. This is a collaborative medium that relies on good communication and finding people that you connect with. And we hope that this has been a beneficial conversation for you. That's going to do it for this episode of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope that you're out there making stuff, finding fellow makers, and finding resources that inspire you. Hey, maybe even that's this podcast. And if it does, we hope that you'll subscribe on iTunes and give us a rating and review there as well. We'll be back next week with another episode of this show. And hey, if you liked this and you want to see other shows on themes, send us an email, podcasts@ucbcomedy.com. We'll be back next week, and until then, we'll see you on the internet.
What up, jabroniacs? This is Dan Black from the Comedians of Wrestling podcast, the podcast where the world of comedy collides head-to-head with the world of professional wrestling. Past guests on the show have been WWE superstar Dolph Ziggler, WWE superstar John Morrison, WWE superstar Damian Sandow, plus hilarious comedians Lucas Brothers, Dan St. Germain. The list goes on and on and on. You can listen to the podcast every single Thursday. We are part of the UCB Podcast Network, jabronis.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.